If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. And today's Thursday, so here we are. Appreciate you tuning in. Hope your week's going well. A little bit of hit and miss with the weather. A little muggy, I guess. Pretty much advertised as July, although I will tell you, later in the evening when these showers, it has been cooler than I remember being in July in the past. But anyway, we'll see how that goes. Again, thanks for joining us. We've got a lot of information to get to you today. We'll give you an update on what's going on with the federal trial here in Tallahassee. We did that Tuesday. We got a little bit more information we'll pass on to you. Obviously, there's a couple jurors that aren't very interested and just chose to sleep. Or I shouldn't say a couple, one. It's pretty amazing. Judge Hinkle, who's been around for a while, said that he had never seen a juror miss as much of the testimony through sleeping in his 25 years on the bench, or his 25 years, I guess, as a judge. So the news there is that they've got rid of their two alternates already. And so now I think, you know, if something happens to another juror, they either have to delay the trial, or at some point, I guess they would do a mistrial and start over. We won't get ahead of ourselves there. But we've got some job numbers we're going to talk about in our last segment. Very interesting. Going to compare them to the state level. Some interesting dynamics going on with the jobs. And as we have talked about this before, you know, comparing the job numbers in June to last June is really a very useless exercise. So what we've started doing is giving you the comparing it to last June and then the year before, 2019, to show you where we are relative to that. And again, some very interesting dynamics going on, which I think are overall positive for our community. And so we'll dig into that. Unfortunately, we've got to talk about the COVID numbers again. There was a, because it's in the news, not only from a statewide perspective, but locally here, Capital Regional Medical Center and Tallahassee Memorial released a joint statement yesterday. Hospitalizations are up, and the median age, I believe they said, was 47. So obviously, the people that are older and got vaccinated and were at risk for a bad outcome appears not to be the target for these hospitalizations. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to give you the number of hospitalizations, give you a perspective on what it was like back in the, when the pandemic was at its peak, so you can get a perspective there. But something else too is we'll look at I'll describe to you the trend with regards to the number of cases and deaths. So we'll go over that in the last segment. The second segment, we're going to talk a little bit about a issue here that has popped up, and I'll be able to give you a little background on it. But a formal ethics complaint has been filed by a member of the firefighters union here in Tallahassee. As you may recall, if you listen to the show, we have we've discussed this a little bit. The two unions, the police union and the firefighters union, their contracts were both up at the same time, so that put a lot of union negotiations on the plate of city manager Reese Goad. I'm sure he was thrilled about that, but they were both very contentious. You remember the billboards with the police department? They got that resolved. Firefighters actually got it resolved, got their contract resolved before the police union, I believe. But there was still a little bit of animosity, and it's directed to something that's a little bit technical in terms of the fire service fee. And so we'll dig into that a little bit. But this this ethics complaint, there was a lot of talk about what is in the ethics complaint behind the scenes or over the last month or so. So the gentleman that has filed this ethics complaint is obviously feels passionate about it. And we'll go over that and give you my experience with dealing with the Florida Commission on Ethics and sort of what their charge is. And then, you know, the city is not going to have a formal comment on this. And it'll go through the process. We'll talk about what that process is. Also, I want to talk a little bit about the Tallahassee Solar Farm. The airport won an award because of their investment in solar panels or solar farms out at the airport. And so there is a release on that. and I'll go through the sort of the nuts and bolts of that. But what I thought was interesting is there's information in there about how many homes these solar farms are servicing, and wanted to give you, again, another perspective of, you know, what percentage of the total homes in Leon County are getting served by solar. I think it'd be an interesting thing to look at. And then also want to talk about something that the county commission passed, I guess, it was at their last meeting. And so regards to the opioid crisis, we published a story, Italis reports on the drug overdoses, the increase in drug overdoses in Florida. And this is a significant increase. And the whole crisis that we've had with opioids, it's been a very traumatic experience. And there's a couple of companies that have filed for bankruptcy due to some of the policies they had in place that encouraged the use of these drugs. And so there was a bankruptcy by a major drug producer. And Leon County was able to go ahead and become a part of that. And we'll describe exactly what that means in the second segment. A program announcement here, and we've got a story up on this in Tallahassee Reports. And, you know, the Jeff Cameron Show, which we had, Tallahassee Reports had written an article about, I guess probably a month ago, about they would probably be looking for a new home because the radio station that was carrying on, the ESPN 97.9, was bought by a company that basically runs Christian radio networks. And so, that meant that they were basically going to flip that format of that radio show. And so Jeff Cameron Show was looking for, in terms of its terrestrial radio, was looking for a new home. And so turns out that there's been an agreement reached where actually our station here, Real Talk 93.3, is going to be carrying the Jeff Cameron Show beginning, I think, in the first week or second week in August from 1 to 3, Monday through Friday. And if you go to TallahasseeReports.com, you can get the details on that. But this is sort of a change. Well, obviously, it's a change that mirrors what's going on in the radio industry. And also in social media. So it looks like Jeff's going to be hired by Warchant, warchant.com, to be the provider of a lot of content there. He's going to do his radio show from the studios here at Real Talk 93.3, and that show will be live streamed to the different social media platforms of warchant.com. So, Cameron has been obviously a broadcaster here for the last 20 years or so, and is the trusted voice with the Seminoles, providing sometimes some very controversial commentary. But I tell you what, I've listened to him for the last few years. I don't think it's a secret that I'm a Clemson grad and a Clemson fan, and he is someone that I think gives a very good perspective, not afraid to talk about when he makes a mistake. So it'll be interesting to see how this all goes, but I'm excited to be, doing my show just in front of his. So anyway, maybe we'll get a little bit of a synergy there, but enough of that. When we get back, we will go ahead and pivot to some local issues, talk about the firefighter ethics complaint and some of the other issues that I think are important for you to know. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
Cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home. But it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way. And I recommend you start with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you and answer all your questions. Give them a call at 385-6649. That's 385-6649. Okay, so ethics complaints. I have a little bit of, institutional knowledge about how to file an ethics complaint from years ago, and reading them and understanding some of the bars that have to be reached to really, you know, the system is not set up to really reward. I shouldn't say reward. It's got to be a real tight ethics complaint for it to get anywhere. And the system is, you've got to really have a lot of information, a lot of smoking guns. And even then, it's very difficult. So the issue here involves a pretty technical issue, but it involves fire services. And our fire services are funded by a fire service fee, which is regulated by a state statute. And without getting into the details, it's been controversial over a number of years. It was, you know, fire services used to be provided by the property tax, but state statutes allows local governments to put in a fee. Now, the issue with that is the fee is, it's pretty tightly, supposed to be pretty tightly controlled and only go to fire services. And so the issue here is that, well, it's, you know, it's about money, which all, you know, a lot of things in government is about money. And the firefighter union is always obviously negotiating to get higher salaries, better benefits, and that's got to be balanced off with what is raised in revenue. And so, as I had mentioned before, the negotiation was going on over the last year. It was very contentious, but was eventually resolved. And I think one of the things that is sort of helping to make this a problem is that all of the money coming down from the feds has allowed the city now to go back and make some changes. You saw the changes on the minimum wage with regards to the city employees, which again is good for city employees, but it also required the city to give across the board raises. And so you see this money flowing into the city. And I think the firefighters, which signed their agreement before this, before they saw all the money coming down, now are looks to me like they're a little bit upset that they feel like they could have got a better deal. And their concern is this, is that the fire service fee is not going to the dedicated services or the dedicated accounts that it's supposed to be. And so they are basically in a process of trying to prove this by doing information requests. And, you know, I can tell you from the past that you can learn a lot of information from information requests, data requests, stuff that's not, you know, out on a website somewhere. And the city has always been very good, even through the years where there was a lot of tension with, you know, obviously some of the stuff that is proving to have happened back then. We're always very good at providing the information that was asked for. And, you know, I've talked about that before. They have a city clerk that is independent of some of the other departments, reports directly to the city commission. And so we never had a problem getting information. Now, the guts of this ethics complaint, and the first issue that I see from, you know, dealing with ethics complaints, is it's about the misuse of public position relating to city manager Reese Goad. Now, that is a catch-all phrase which is used in state statutes. And so you've got to prove the misuse of the office. It's not about him taking money. There's not documents that he, you know, received a check somewhere. This is sort of this very ambiguous misuse of office charge. And so that's the first hurdle they're going to have to get over, is to show that they provided some charge that is, quote, legally sufficient to fit in within that rubric. Now, we'll tell you, the misuse of office rubric or measurement for someone violating ethics is, you know, even the Independent Ethics Board here in the city of Tallahassee has had a difficult time dealing with that. And so, because it is really sort of a catch-all, and, you know, this has been in the statutes for a while, and I didn't get a chance to do this, but it'd be very interesting to go back and look at really how many people in the state of Florida have got ethics violations related to the misuse of office language in the state statutes. Probably not many. But anyway, that's the first part of this ethics complaint. Now, to get to the, again, just to the heart of the matter, is that the person that filed this is His name is Joey Davis. He's the president of the Tallahassee Professional Fighters, and he's arguing that city manager Reese Goad, through Mr. Davis's boss, has asked him to stand down in terms of requesting information from the city in their efforts to, you know, verify where the fire service fees are being allocated to. So he calls that a threat, and he actually, one of the things that I find interesting is he cites the fire chief, Mr. Gaines, in here as saying some things to him. And you know, if it was to reach legal sufficiency, then it would be interesting because, you know, there'll be depositions. People will be put under oath. And it says here that there's also, there was a chief in the fire department that stated that city manager had directed him to bring Mr. Davis in and tell him to stand down. He added that city manager stated that if I did not back off, it would not be good for anyone. So his point is he's misusing his office with those statements. And so, look, obviously a lawsuit is one side of a story. And look, I reached out to the city. They're not commenting on this, which is sort of, that's sort of their standard policy. Why would you comment on something until you find out if it's going to be legally sufficient? Then you would move on there. But, you know, this involves millions of dollars in the fire service fee. And these are very high-level charges when you're talking about the city manager who is in charge of, you know, a $1 billion budget almost at the city, you know, is, quote, threatening an employee through his through a supervisor. So that's been filed. We'll try to do some more reconnaissance and get a story up on that. But that is that's in the news. Now, the last two issues I really wanted to get to here on the local front, and then when we get back, we'll do a rundown of the FBI, the federal trial here, is first on the opioid crisis. There was a lawsuit. Nearly $5 billion is going to be divided up between some state governments and local municipalities. Now, Leon County was part of that lawsuit, and they approved the plan. But since we're a smaller county, under 400,000 in population, we're going to have to wait to see exactly how they will divide the money up. Any money that comes here will be supposed to be used to abate the or mitigate the problems caused by that drug crisis. And so, look, this money could be way down the road, but it is, you know, I remember when this came up a couple years ago, and, you know, so it's going to come to fruition. It looks like there's going to be money there. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about was the Tallahassee International Airport. So they won a statewide environmental award. So that caught my attention. So I went to look at the press release. And it has to do with the solar farm. You know, they've added solar farm number 2 out there, which added 330 acres to the existing 120-acre solar farm, the first site. So now they've got 450 acres of solar panels out there with 60 megawatts of what they call clean energy per year. And so that won them award. But I was more interested in, you know, as we move through this this debate over how much we're going to be able to use renewable energy, it says here that the solar farms produce enough energy to sustain the city's municipal buildings and provide more than 9,500 Tallahassee utility customers with clean, affordable, and reliable energy. Now, just for reference, there's about 100,000 homes in Leon County. So you're looking at about 10% of the homes that are being are able to get the energy from solar farms. Now, this doesn't, and I understand for those out there that understand the intricacies of this, this doesn't deal with the peak demand and what happens when the people really need energy quick. But again, this is from a press release from the city of Tallahassee, and you know, sort of tooting their horn in terms of what some people around the state think about what they've done at the Tallahassee International Airport. All right, when we get back, we will pivot back to the federal trial, give you some more updates, and then also give you some any breaking news we have on it. So we'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold. It's Thursday. You're listening to Real Talk 93.3. Stay tuned. I think I have an interesting perspective on job numbers and also on some of the COVID numbers that we're having to look at again because of the spike in cases. This will mark the third increase in COVID cases, and so we want to go back and look at what happened during those increases, and we'll relay the numbers to you. And CRMC and TMH released a sort of a joint statement on the issue with the COVID here in hospitalization, so we'll touch on that. So stay tuned for that. But right now, I want to pivot to the federal trial going on here in Tallahassee. And I think this has been covered. Probably most people know about the juror that was removed because the person was falling asleep during the trial. So it doesn't say a lot for the interest level or, I guess, the prosecution and defense. But anyway, so they're down to no alternative jurors and so alternates. And so now they're stuck with the 12. I'm not sure exactly what happens if something else goes wrong with one of the jurors. But that was some big news. But we've got a – Tosh Reports has a story up where we summarize some of the reports from the actual people that can get into the federal courtroom. And just want to touch on some of those. And then we've got some other news from Jeff Berlew, the Tallahassee Democrat, who is covering the trial on a daily basis. But first, again, you can go to TallahasseeReports.com to get this information. It appears that there was a use of burner phones. I don't know if they knew the FBI was listening to them, maybe. But I think the thing here is to look at the expanse, who were using the burner phones. It wasn't just Mr. Maddox and his associate, Carter Smith. There were actually some city employees, unfortunately, and that had burner phones, with the most important one being, obviously, Tallahassee City Manager Rick Fernandez, who is no longer there. The defense, J.T. Burnett's lawyers, went after Paige Carter Smith's credibility, wanted to basically show that, look, she was testifying because the government is going to be able to, at the end of this, if she provides testimony and is honest from their perspective, that will maybe shorten her sentence because she's already pled guilty to bribery. So that's one thing. They also got Paige Carter Smith to confirm that she had previously lied under oath in a ethics complaint. So those are issues that I think they're sort of nuts and bolts issues that any good defense attorney is going to do. Obviously, when you're using the testimony of someone who has credibility issues, you've got to be sure that that's evident, the testimony is corroborated by other things, documents, other people. So we'll see the impact of that on the jury, I guess, when they decide what to do. Now, also revealed during the day was the financial troubles of governance, which would, give you a motive for the some of the actions of Mr. Maddox. Had to borrow money to keep governance afloat around this time, April 2014. And then after Paige Carter Smith testified, Mike Miller, and I say that with quotes around his name, the undercover agent, testified and talked about how they were trying to get close to Burnett, and that how Burnett had bragged about getting the McKibben Hotel killed. One of the interesting parts of this is that the major charge against Burnett, one of the major charges against J.T. Burnett, revolves around something that happened before the FBI even got to town. The reason why the FBI got wind of it or was able to go back and recreate it was because of discussions with J.T. Burnett. And so, that is, again, they were able to go back and corroborate what he was saying with documents. And this goes back to some of the earlier testimony about $100,000 check being mailed to governance. That's an interesting aspect of this. Now, if you go back and we look at sort of what happened yesterday and what's happening this morning, the defense is becoming more out front in exactly what their strategy is here. And, my delineation on what happened with the McKibben Hotel is important because in terms of the FBI getting here, what they're going to argue is that the FBI, basically the undercover agents, entrapped J.T. Burnett. They wined and dined him. They led him Mr. Jansen, his defense attorney, even asked one of the undercover agents, was it their goal to get Mr. Burnett drunk while they were out of town? Now, they have taken trips to Vegas, Nashville, and Dallas, from what we know so far. But the argument is that they created this environment where they were trying to get him to lead him on to say that, look, yeah, he could be bribed. Now, I guess this is going to be up to the jury to decide, because, you know, there is a line there that you got to be careful and not to cross. And one of the things that we see in some of the testimony is that they were trying to get Mr. Burnett to say, look, so Maddox is the guy we need to send money to. And I think it's fair to say that Mr. Burnett said yes. You know, he's the guy that gets everything done. He's the most sophisticated city commissioner that we have. But they kept trying to get him to tell them to send money to Scott Maddox. And then it appears in the testimony that I've read is that they actually sent a check to Mr. Maddox without Burnett's knowledge. And I think that the defense attorney is using this to, again, argue that the undercover FBI agents were doing a little more than they should have been doing in terms of trying to get Burnett involved. And so it will be very interesting to see where that part of it goes. Now, if you're following this closely, you'll say, okay, well, that's the part of the undercover FBI agents, but what about the McKibben Hotel issue? And I think this is going to be one of the delineating factors. So let's say that the jury thinks that the FBI did, in fact, entrap J.T. Burnett and on these trips that he took, and, you know, that absent their involvement, he would not have sent money to Scott Maddox. All right, let's go ahead and take a leap of faith and say that's what happens. Well, then you're left with this charge against J.T. Burnett with regards to the McKibben Hotel, where you had $100,000floating around. Now, so what would be the defense on that? Well, I think if you paid attention to Gary Yordan's testimony, one of the things that he said, and he said, was that Scott Maddox was never going to vote on that project. Now, what wasn't clear to me, and I haven't been in the courtroom, was that who knew that and when did they know it? Obviously, Gary Yordan was representing the principals with the McKibben Hotel project, and if he was up front with them that Scott was never going to vote on this because there was a conflict, that's one thing. But I can't imagine, and maybe this was the case, that J.T. Burnett would have known that Scott Maddox wasn't going to vote on this and still paid him $100,000. Now, that's going to be, I think if you're on the defense side, you're going to argue that, look, this wasn't a bribe. He wasn't going to even vote on this anyway. And, you know, it could have some weight with the jury. And I think that it's going to be for this charge or this allegation to result in a guilty verdict, I think that the prosecution is going to have to be very clear if this is what the facts are. If Mr. Maddox, one of the reasons why he held off recusing himself was to, you know, entice J.T. Burnett into making that payment. And then it turns out once he made that payment, and I don't know the timing of this, then Mr. Maddox recuses himself. I don't know the impact that has on the jury when you put that in context with Mr. Yordan's statement that Maddox was never going to vote on this issue anyway. So, I mean, you could look at it as a shrewd business deal. If you know you're not going to vote, but you hold out so you can make some money, I mean, that's one thing. But in this case, it actually turned out to be, you know, obviously possible bribery, which we'll know, you know, in about another week or so, I guess, or 2 weeks. Now, on that point, from what I'm hearing, it looks like the prosecution case will probably be over Monday or Tuesday. And so that means that you could probably anticipate former City Commissioner Scott Maddox testifying, I would think, Thursday, Friday, or Monday. And so we'll have to keep an eye on that, because it looks like that Paige Carter-Smith is done unless she gets recalled later. She was put on the stand already and cross-examined by the defense. I guess they would call her back if they wanted. But we'll have to we'll keep you posted on that. All right, when we get back, like I said, we'll have, I think, an interesting perspective on the job numbers and also the COVID numbers. You know, it's back in the news, and we'll talk about what the real numbers say and why it may or may not be a concern going forward. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen, but quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be better than anywhere else because they do not mark up the cost of the stone materials the way they see it. Since they didn't carve it out of the mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fees as if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give them a call, 765-2037. That's 765-2037, and we appreciate their sponsorship. Okay, we're going to pivot to some numbers. We'll look at the jobs numbers first, and as we've talked about previously, you know, job numbers come out on a monthly basis, and we at Tosh Reports have been, one of the ways you look at how you're doing is compared to the previous month in the previous year. Or the month in the previous year. But given the COVID pandemic and the problems we had in 2020, it doesn't really do much good, doesn't show you a lot of perspective. So now we're including 3 years of comparisons. And so we've got the latest numbers in June, and they show some interesting trends. First of all, there are more people working in this month, June, the report of 149,517, than were working last year, which makes sense because last year this was right in the middle of the pandemic, a lot of shutdowns, people staying home. That was 133,000 people working, and the unemployment rate was 8.8%. Well, in June of 2019, 147,800 people were working. So we are 1,600 people ahead of the number of employed people 2 years ago, which is a very positive sign. Now, the unemployment rate in 2019 was 2.9%. Now it is 5.4%, right in between the 8.8% that was reported last year. So the question is, if we got more people employed now than we did 2 years ago, why is the unemployment rate higher? It's because the number of people looking for jobs has increased by almost 5,000 when you compare it to June of 2019. So, look, so the unemployment rate at 5.4 being higher because of that reason is a good thing because it shows that there are people that are confident that they can get a job, so they're out looking for work. It also could be a testament to the growth that we're seeing in Tallahassee. If you start looking at the report we did, I believe it was Tuesday, we talked about the growth in residential resales. So I think these job numbers, are showing sort of a robust economy in the sense that we have more people working than we did last year and 2 years ago. Yes, the unemployment rate is higher, but that's because we got more people looking for work. So that's what you call growth. So hopefully over the next 6 months, out of those 158,000 people that are looking for work, we'll be able to provide jobs and the unemployment rate will go down and we will show some real growth in Leon County. Now, when I say over the next 6 months, one of the interesting things with that is that we should, over the next month or two, get some idea of what's going on with the fulfillment center project out at Mahan and in I-10. If you remember, that was, we were talking about that needing or creating well over 1,000 jobs, 1,100 jobs. And so, if that starts coming online, and it's going to take, a while, a year to build that. But from what I understand, looking in other communities, the hiring rate's pretty quick. It gets ramped up really quick. So, you could see that as being something that would start really hitting the community. Let's say it gets approved in the next month or so. So you would think that maybe by a year from now, next fall, that jobs may be being advertised. I'm sure they'll already have been advertised, but maybe actually being paying wages at this new project if everything moves forward. Now, if you look at this compared to the state, it's about the same thing as happening at the state level. Their unemployment rate is 5.7%. We're a little bit lower at 5.4. We have added, from a percentage standpoint, a few more jobs compared to the 2019 year. We're at about a 3.1% rate over the number of jobs in 2019, where the state is about 2.4%. Now, we had the lower unemployment rate in 2019. We were at 2.9. The state was at 3.5. We're still below them, but not quite as much. So, again, I think this is all pointing in a good direction, and we'll keep you posted with the next release, which will be in July. All right, pivoting to something that could really hurt the economy, and we'll see if that comes to fruition, is the issue with COVID. Now, if you're reading the national news and even the state news, you're noticing that there's a major spike in cases and appears to be hospitalizations. I got an email yesterday from the communications people at one of the hospitals, and there's a joint statement that we published on our website. We made the determination to publish the full press release because it was, first of all, it was a joint statement, and that gives it a little bit of independence from it being one hospital. And it addressed, I think, a major issue that was being talked about around the state. And basically, what they're saying here is that the COVID-19 hospitalizations is the non-vaccinated underage 50 population, including many individuals in their 20s and 30s. It says currently TMH and CRMC have about 47 patients hospitalized with COVID-19, which is slightly higher than last week. And it says here, with over 77% of Leon County residents age 65 and over already vaccinated, we are seeing the number of hospitalizations in this population decrease. So the point being, the good news is the ones over 65 that, you know, we're looking at having the possible bad outcomes, they're the ones that got vaccinated and aren't showing up at the hospitals. Now, the concern, obviously, is you don't want to ravage the hospitals with people, even if they don't have bad outcomes. And I think that's the concern here, is that, you know, if you see during the peak of this virus, I think we had about 150 hospitalizations, maybe 150 to 160. But now what you're seeing, you know, again, we're at maybe a third of that with people that are probably going to have good outcomes. You know, the information that I was able to get looking around Leon County, I haven't had a death in maybe 5 to 6 weeks related to COVID. And, you know, if you look at the state level graph of cases with deaths, and I spoke about this earlier, is that you'll see, you know, we've had basically two major increases in cases over this pandemic. One was back in the summer of last year, and that was followed very quickly by a very spike in the number of deaths, which it was reaching, you know, an average of 180 deaths a day. And so, but then we had that, again, we had a fall and the deaths fell. And back in October, it spiked again. And the deaths basically almost reached the same level. And now, since then, with the vaccination of being available, the number of cases have fallen tremendously. But now, here in July, after they sort of bottomed out about a month ago, they have spiked up to a level, you know, again, a very quick spike. And we have not yet seen the deaths follow that that change. Now, if you look at the number of, looks like about 250 cases a day on the 7-day average. If you go back and look at during the, when COVID was increasing at that rate, you know, deaths were quick to follow. And so we should know something about, you know, the next week or so. And, you know, that will be the news because there's two points to this. First of all, we should not be seeing an increase like we did previously in deaths. And that's because of the fact that most of the people that are that would be struck with this virus and have a bad outcome are now mostly vaccinated. So that will be good news. The bad news here is if the people that are getting this are starting to cause problems with hospitals, because that was the other issue. We wanted to try to keep people, people out of the hospitals. And if we see this, it will be interesting to see if there is a ceiling that is below the ceiling that was reached previously in terms of the hospitalizations before we had the vaccinations. So anyway, unfortunately, something that we'll have to keep following, which we will do and give you updates periodically to see exactly where the trends are going. So anyway, thanks for joining us today. The weekend is headed our way, so have a good one, and we'll be back on Tuesday.